Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast is week three of golf's return. We're recapping the action in Connecticut at the Travelers, everything from Renegade fans to COVID positive tests. And we're also giving out some podcast exclusive picks for this week's Rocket Mortgage Classic, where our buddy Nate Lashley defends, plus golf on TV gossip, some Cam Newton to the Patriots talk. I can't believe I'm saying that right now. That is just wild to think of, but that's the world we're in. And this week's guest, a bit of a surprise for some people who are following us on social media, but we indeed have a 2019 LPGA Tour winner. Her name is Shia Knight on the podcast. Shout out to my buddy Michael, who I previously worked with. Not you, different Michael. He guessed right. The hints and guessed our special interview this week. Working our way up in the world of golf with another great guest, though. Talking Bama, Texas, plus a 15 on a par 3 that she made, and a whole lot more. But first, Michael, my man, proud to announce a new co-host, a new partnership we have with not just Quantix Golf, not just Desert Fox Golf, not just Groove It Golf, but our friends at Plain Swing. Plain Swing. Okay, I'm really excited to introduce this. Plain Swing, the world's number one golf swing trainer, used by golfers in over 80 countries and counting. Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, the pros, major championship winners have used it, and it helps better understand and perfect their golf swing on a daily basis. Plain Swing is an all-encompassing tool that enhances communication between coach and student to facilitate rapid improvement, and it helps the golfer understand the biomechanics of their body in relation to the golf swing. Repetition is key in the golf swing, and no other golf training aid allows a golfer to feel the proper movement the way Plain Swing does. The unique weighted power slider that comes with each Plain Swing is your new golf fitness tool. It helps strengthen your golf muscles and builds your core. This is that crucial motor skill change, often referred to as muscle memory, Mike. Muscle memory key. The pros have it all, yep. And allows you to develop a powerful and repeatable swing. Repeatable, Mike. That, I think that's where we struggle, is repeating a good swing.
I don't know what that is.
Plain Swing is here to help that repetition. They've got three different packages depending on your level of investment to the game, and even a Plain Swing trainer as well, combining play and swing. It's an option for the kids, so they can start off right. You can check out plainswing.com for all their options and learn about their products. Sign up for a free exclusive instructional video and join the Plain Swing revolution on your path to better shots and lower scores. Again, that is plainswing.com. Check them out today.
And welcome to Course of Life, presented by Desert Fox Golf, Groove It Golf, Quantix Golf, and our news partners at Plain Swing. I'm Michael, he's Alex, and Alex, we had a very interesting week on the PGA Tour up in Connecticut for the Travelers Championship.
Yes.
And it all started with the Rona just rearing its ugly head. We need to come to terms to live with it, is what everyone is saying. But in the meantime, we had caddies, players,
everyone, testing positive.
This was a rough couple days for the PGA Tour to start the Travelers Championship.
Not a great one. Is that also indirect shout out to everything that went on in Hilton Head Island the week before too?
Kind of. It
could be a little indication of that.
Everywhere.
Things seem to be pretty clean in Dallas a few weeks ago, but you know what Texas looks like right now. Everyone's aware of that side of the story, but the bottom line is that obviously this is an issue ongoing with the tour and how they protect players against the coronavirus. Denny McCarthy tested positive. Dylan Fratelli tested positive. Harris English tested positive. He's out of the Rocket Mortgage this week. A few caddies. The tour is definitely on ice right now, but like you said, Jay Monahan saying playoff. On. We have to learn to live with this virus in our life. I like that I've seen more precautions, but last week's performance in terms of just the tour and getting it right, I would give it maybe a C or C minus.
I think they maybe weren't sure what they were supposed to do in this scenario because it is so different. I do like that what they've decided, starting with the Rocket Mortgage, is that unlike these past few events, You can't even be on site until you get your negative test result back from being in market. So I like that they're just adding that additional layer of protection, because ultimately what this really is, it's all psychological. It's how do I feel safe? So that's what they got to do. Because Rory McIlroy was calling people out too on how many were standing around the greens and everything.
How about Rory playing the social distancing police, basically? Yeah. He was doing a count all the way up to, I believe, 17 people he counted in a small vicinity around the green. The tour does not want gatherings of more than 10 in a small area. He was putting his mask on as soon as he walked off the 18th green last week at Travelers. And a lot of players following suit. You saw a lot of masks on the broadcast as well this past week, which was definitely another encouraging step. Obviously, with everything that's gone on last week with the positive tests.
And I really appreciate that, especially coming from Rory, who's kind of become the captain of the game and the players out there, is that they need to recognize that they are examples of what is the right thing to do. So they need to do it right. And
I know we don't want to shut this down again. That's the last thing we want. We don't want to shut this down again. We had a fear that might happen as the cases came in Travelers. But Jay Monahan is saying play on. Mike, I put a poll out on Instagram asking people, hey, there's been several COVID cases. Should the tour play on? The results, Mike, I got 20 votes and 18 of them said the tour should play on. Two didn't. So the people out there want golf to continue. It's just a question of, can they ramp up the safety precautions? I noticed, I don't know if they were listening to us, Mike, but the fist bump is completely gone on the 18th green now. You saw it last weekend. It was just the air fist bump, occasional elbows you saw. But outside of the player and their own personal caddy, that there was no fist bumps exchange at the end of the round. It was just waves goodbye as they walked off the green. So definitely these small added measures like that hopefully have the difference that we need to make.
Yeah, I'm hoping that the tour really, really ups their game. And it's not really the tour so much as the players that aren't taking this seriously, because everyone needs to be taking this super seriously, because they need to recognize that if they don't, their livelihood is in danger, and the game may go away for the rest of this year. Because if it does shut down again, it's 2020.
I can't even think that. And I was thinking that in the few hours when you told me that a press conference was announced from Jay Monahan last week. I was thinking about that, and thankfully that did not happen. But I'm getting mentally ready for that. I hope that's not the case. Surely.
The question is, what if we get another 3, 4, 5 test positive test results coming into the Rocket Mortgage Classic, which is this weekend? That's where I think
what's the number? You know, is it 10? Is it 20? Is it 30?
They asked Jay Monahan that question and he was like, I don't have a number. We'll know when we know. And I think that's true. You'll know when you know, because it's going to be the reaction of the players. You're going to have the guys testing positive. Let's step away. But it's in how many other players decide they also need to step away. Webb Simpson stepped away. Graham McDowell, because caddy did, obviously. You know, you have guys that stepped away from the game because they wanted to be cautious. But how many more are going to start doing it? That's the question.
Yeah, it was. There was one really weird hiccup. One thing they do need to eliminate immediately in the weeks coming. And I'm sure the commissioner had a phone conversation about this. But last Friday night, it came down word that Jason Day, who was playing with, I believe, one of the positive tests, he thought he may have had some symptoms of coronavirus and asked for a test. And unfortunately, Mike, the hiccup is while he was waiting for those tests, they actually decided that he wasn't going to withdraw from the tournament. They put him in a onesome in a group all by himself, and he played Saturday morning by his lonesome in a means to kind of socially distance himself while they waited for the results. I don't like that at all. I don't want them to wait for the results in future scenarios. I hope they jot that down as a learning experience. But overall, again, I give the last couple of weeks maybe like a C or so for the tour, and I hope they can turn that into a B in the next few weeks.
I mean, let me put it this way. If someone is displaying symptoms at my current retail establishment, they don't come back until we get test results.
Yeah, seriously.
As soon as they tell us they have symptoms, it's like, nope, you're home, you're getting tested, don't come back till you get it. Tell us your result.
These are just no-brainers at this point. Hopefully the tour is understanding that as well. So they're tackling the Rona 1 week at a time, still playing on. The golf happened in Connecticut, fortunately.
And it was crazy.
First of all, it was crazy because there was a little delay. It was a weird moment Sunday afternoon. The thunderstorm rolled in Connecticut summer, muggy days, typical New England fashion, and delayed things for an hour or so. But eventually, DJ had enough staying power to get it done. He held on by one with a fantastic drive at 18 and beat a past champion and Kevin Streelman to hold on for his 21st tour victory.
Yeah, and once again, I feel like now is becoming what we're seeing a lot of these weeks. It's just a lot of low scores. a lot of guys going super low. DJ, of course, put up that 61 on Saturday. We had a lot of 62s all week. It's crazy how low these guys are going as they come back.
Birdie Fest. I know you're seeing when like the really good fields go to all these shorter courses and these ball striker paradises, they're still tearing up there too.
Yeah.
So DJ proved that with an impressive performance, winning by one, I believe 19 under total for the week. 13 consecutive PGA Tour seasons that Dustin Johnson has had a win. That's a really impressive stat for a really durable player.
Yeah, he's just always there. Just hanging around, just playing his game, doing his DJ thing. You know who else is doing his thing?
Yeah, who else?
Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, he had a moment Thursday and Friday. It was a Phil moment. He was the leader going to the weekend.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, I mean, even more than that, he had on his jogger pants. He had on his reflective sunglasses. He looked like...
Fashion statements at 50 years old. I love it.
You know, he looked like he was trying to be 20 again.
Yeah, he really is riding the ocean wave vibes. Like, he's got a very Cali fashion lately, very retro fits for Phil. The joggers were very aggressive. Like, I just left the gym and got to my tee time type of look.
Yeah.
He sucked in the weekend, unfortunately. 71-71. And
typical Phil.
Didn't have much there, but it was good to see him back in contention at least. And he won there a long time ago. Yeah. 01 and 02 back in the day. So good to see him back in
real long time ago. Beefy Bryson, meanwhile, just... talking about bombs. Let's talk about bombs from Beefy Bryson.
I mean, the best one was John Rahm in the group ahead. 389-yard par four, Mike. Well, I'll say that one more time. 389-yard par four.
Yeah.
John Rahm is putting on the green, and he's walking off the green, and all of a sudden a ball comes bouncing and rolling up to his feet. And he just looks back and gives this wry smile because he knew exactly who it was.
Yep.
Beefy Bryson delivering bombs on another level at this past week. He's in contention again. Another top 10, another impressive performance. Not in the winner's circle, but this is clearly going to be a theme moving forward.
Is he going to put it together? I mean, how much longer until he gets his win?
I'm waiting for just a big, long golf course. When's that going to happen? When we just do have that bomber's paradise where, you know, instead of players hitting driver 3-iron to longer par fours, they weren't doing that at all in Connecticut. It's a shorter course. Mm-hmm. Instead of driver 3-iron, Bryson's hitting driver 8 or 7-iron. I think that's where you're really going to see the huge advantage on a course like that when it's a bomber's paradise. So we'll look for that in the coming weeks.
A couple other things to note from the Travelers as well. Talk about Ian Poulter.
Yes. Ian Poulter tried to blame a fart on his playing partner.
Yeah.
And it was all caught on PGA Tour Live.
Yeah.
Shame on Ian. I know you love a good Ian Poulter shaming. His playing partner, Greg Chalmers, hit the tee shot. And in about a half a second after, you hear just an explosive gastrointestinal noise come from the tee box. And it seemed like it was Chalmers at first, but then after some bickering, you quickly realized that it was his playing partner, Ian Poulter, who tried to play it off as if it wasn't him. Shame on Ian for that one.
I mean, you know, whoever smelt it dealt it, right? Isn't that what we say?
Yeah. That's right. And I know, and obviously, you know, Ian tried to get in front of it with the conversation, but Chalmers wasn't having any of that. He was like, you know, you're not going to blame me for that. I heard that noise. He said something to the effect of, you were trying to keep that quiet. You absolutely did not do that at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was an interesting weekend. Travelers, Renegade fans kind of near the property. There were some suburban streets that were filled and some sidewalks where some guys had some binoculars, some good crowds over in the condos that surrounded the course, but overall pretty subdued atmosphere and good times to see them out in Connecticut. I've been to that tournament several times. You can check out my Patreon blog where I talk about my memories of the tournament and, overall, good week at TPC Rhode Island.
It was indeed. Let's move over to a couple other things before we move into next week's Rocket, or this week's Rocket Mortgage in Detroit. I am so ecstatic that we won't have to listen to Joe Buck call golf anymore.
Oh,
I'm so happy about this.
The big news. The big network shift here.
Yeah.
Fox giving up on the USGA broadcast, basically.
I'm kind of surprised by it because their numbers were okay, and the tour seemed to really like what they were doing.
So 5 years, lasted, that experiment. You know, they got ripped on a lot, and it was easy to rip on them. You had, if you remember the first broadcast, Chambers Bay, Jordan Spieth beating Dustin Johnson. They had Fox robots like running down the fairway and like just way too much overproduction. They kind of got ripped. They went back to the drawing board and they picked up a lot of things that end up being part of the broadcast. The main one that you got to give credit to Fox for, Mike, they went with the shot tracer as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And now we don't even know how to watch golf without it at this point.
I mean, it's hard to play golf without it, really.
Yes, seriously.
I have to find my own ball. Come on, man.
Shout out what they did with the shot tracer. We will not see Joe Buck on broadcast anymore. Back to NBC. Back to, I know, shout out Jeremy Schilling, the Celebration of Man, that classic NBC theme song, which we don't hear enough. You know, we get it occasionally for Ryder Cups and whatnot, but it's back for the U.S. Open in a big way. So I look forward to that epic Dan Hicks, Johnny Miller, you know, U.S. Open call. Reminds me of the old Tiger days. It'll be a nice welcome return in September.
Other things of note going on, Korn Ferry Tour, our boy Dylan Wu mic'd up for his top 10 finish this week, past weekend.
He volunteered. He said, do it every week on Twitter. I forgot to send you the tweet, I love. He's our guy. He's officially our Korn Ferry guy right now. Yeah. He's lighting up 18 under for the week, 7 under on Sunday. Yeah, top five.
It's just all, you know what? It seems like all these guys that you've talked to on this podcast, they're doing all right right now.
A little touch of magic right now. Yeah. And for the Course of Life podcast guests, if you're an aspiring mini tour pro out there and you're listening, hit me up in the DMs. Maybe you want to hop on. Maybe this is beneficial for your career. But Dylan Wu with another good week. Texted him after the round Sunday. I asked him what was going on. He said, listen, man, the key is I was making more putts than the weeks before. So
usually helps.
consecutively and consistently. That's what matters. They had some late night playoff action. Kyle Jones with a great win there. But shout out to Dylan Wu for the great finish. And Vince India had a solid week as well, too. So we'll be following the guys in Colorado this week. And then they'll be heading to my neck of the woods in San Antonio for the next couple.
Speaking of the golden touch of being on this podcast, if you remember, it was last year when you reached out on like a Thursday to this guy, Nate Lashley.
A little known tour pro who had very little status.
Journeyman. Yeah.
He had just qualified for the U.S. Open a few weeks ago, and he had gotten into the Rocket Mortgage after making the cut there. And he messaged me back after taking the Thursday night lead and said, yeah, sure, we'll chat. I said, all right, well, why don't you play the rest of the tournament, Nate? Let's see how the rest of the tournament goes, and then we'll talk from there. And lo and behold, he wins the tournament, hops on the Today Show, and hours later, he's talking on the phone with me, Mike.
Yeah.
Of all people,
little Alex. We still don't understand why. But go back into the archives, listen to that episode. Pretty great chat with Nate Lashley. An incredible story.
Yeah, of course, like on Twitter.
He is going to be playing this weekend at the Rocket Mortgage again, the defending champion. What are his odds? What?
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I just put this in our notes before I hopped on. A few of my picks. I'm at Course of Life 1 on Twitter. Just hit a winner a couple weeks ago with Webb Simpson at Harbortown. That was great. Full disclosure, picks were absolutely horrible in Connecticut. So if we ride the roller coaster, that means I'm due for a really good week.
Yep.
Nate Lashley, Mike, defending champion, 105-1 odds
horrible
to win this week?
Horrible.
That's free money.
Yeah.
You got to get a dollar on the defending champion.
I'm assuming that he's in your list.
25 under par last week at a golf course that's only been played once on the PGA Tour last year. I mean, that's an absolute no-brainer. So I love Nate Lashley at 105-1. Another sleeper who played well last week in Connecticut, New England guy by the name of Scott Stallings, hit some really good stingers. This is a good stinger course. He's at 90-1. And then, Mike, I'm going to have to bet Bryson until further notice, especially since we're now going to get to some longer golf courses now.
Yep.
It's unbelievable, but he's going off as the favorite at 7-1 odds, Bryson DeChambeau to win this week. So there's a few picks. I'll put a few more on Twitter by Wednesday night at Course of Life 1. But that's a sampling of who I like this week in Detroit.
I'm going to give you I'm going to give you one more name. I just want to see your reaction.
Yeah.
All right. Guy who finished tied 13 last year in what was his second pro start, Victor Hovland.
Oh, yes. I just bet on him last week, and he finished, I believe, top 15 or 20 last week. I think he was 13 or 14 under for the week. So that's a decent call out as well. Might be an add to the list there. Good insight as well. So good picks there. Hopefully everyone enjoys the Rocket Mortgage as well. And let's see back-to-back. Let's see back-to-back for Nate Lashley. Let's get it done, Nate.
That would be awesome. Be incredible. Yeah. One other thing of note before we move on out of our clubhouse chatter here is this fun little charity tournament that's going to be taking place in the Detroit area on Wednesday, 9-hole exhibition.
Free. You can watch it too. PGA Tour Live. They're just opening it up so anyone can watch it.
And it's who's playing in this?
Bubba, Harold Varner, Jason Day, Wesley Bryan. I hope Jason Day has 3 negative tests in a row. Let's confirm that, please, since we just talked about that a little earlier. But we saw Bubba and Wesley Bryan mic'd up together, if you remember, Sunday at Harbortown. Yep. They were super entertaining. And it's great to have Harold Varner involved as well, too. Came off another good week in the Tour's return at Colonial. So those four, they're going to play a 9-hole charity match for the Detroit area charities. It's going to be on PGA Tour Live Wednesday afternoon. I think it's 1 or 2 o'clock. So great opportunity to get yourself excited for the golf that starts Thursday with a little Wednesday fun day. The tour pros mic'd up. So it's a nice way to start the week. And I like the idea of giving back to the local charities as well.
Exactly. Shout out to the tour. If they're mic'd up, I want to listen. That's all I can
say
right now.
Should be fun.
Let's move over to quarantine content. We still don't have a new name for this. We don't know what we're calling it. It's because I don't have anything. I'm working.
It's distant content.
I'm just begging for you people to stay away from Savannah and wear a mask. That's all I'm asking for.
Mike, the waterfront, the bars, the town.
Let me tell you, half the bars and restaurants are closed in this city right now because all of you keep coming here and giving
just
us all coronavirus.
Left so. it's got to be. Jesus. Yeah. No, it's socially distant content. And what it's ended up being is the random things that are getting thrown on TV now. The networks are getting very desperate with their content at this point.
Yeah.
Because things haven't been able to shoot in the last few months. So if you didn't get it filmed, you know, and post-produced and everything like that by February, it's really not making air at this point. So networks are going back into the vault, and I stumbled upon an old Video Music Awards on MTV with some real throwback scenes. Mike, it was from the year 2000.
Ugh.
Eminem, The Real Slim Shady, was up for Song of the Year. Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, nominated in the female category.
Oh boy.
Justin Timberlake was still with NSYNC. There was all sorts of random celebrity sightings, including from the sports world as well. A-Rod was there. Good times as well, too. All sorts of interesting stuff. I want MTV to show some more classic material like that. It was nostalgia lane for me on Friday night.
Do you think MTV needs to have a MTV Classics channel?
Seriously, there is some sort of like VH1 Classics, but I only get to see it like when I'm on an airplane, like on a certain airline, like once every 5 years. But yeah, you're right. MTV does need a Classics. The thing that blows my mind about MTV is just scroll through. Anyone who's got cable out there, go to MTV Now in your guide, scroll through, and you'll be baffled at how often they just show reruns of Ridiculousness. They run that show more than any network runs any cable show. It's absolutely insane. I saw them run it for 3 days straight one time. The programming department is just super lazy there on a whole nother level. It's unbelievable.
Let's move over to our final chapter of the Big Miss in our Course of Life book club. Again, we've just finished now. We're going to talk about it right now. The end of the Big Miss by Hank Haney about his time coaching Tiger Woods. And I just got to say, he was a bit of a sourpuss in this chapter to me. He was just like, look at me. I'm as good as Butch Harmon. He was just defensive. He was defensive through the whole book. He was even more so in this last chapter.
Yeah, and chapter 8, the final chapter of this book, was the summation of all his defensiveness throughout the entire writings. And Hank Haney's reputation after this book has definitely succeeded what you think of him right there. He's been in a lot of controversy for things he said on his podcast and his radio show. Full disclosure, I tried to get Hank on. Have not heard back. I tried to reach out and see if we could have him on to kind of clear the air and finalize this book club. Have not heard back. He has an open invite to join the show and talk freely about the relationship, though.
I would be really curious to talk to him about what he thinks now, where we are now versus when he wrote this book, because he was talking about how Tiger still had a chance in 2011 and 2012. He needed to win a major in 2012 in order to beat Jack's record. He could probably do it by the time he was in his early 40s. But then just everything continued through the 2010s and Tiger never got there. But then last year was the miracle.
may have flipped him completely on that opinion. Yeah. It could have. I mean, obviously he looked smart saying that maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago, you know,
yeah.
Everyone who did, you know, including people I know, like even my dad used to say like, oh yeah, Tiger's never going to win again. And that was like a really hot take. And he became right over the years because it was correct. Tiger's never going to win the big one again. Tiger's never going to win the big one again. It kept happening. And he kept proliferating that. And then finally, 2019, 2018, the breakout, the breakthrough happened. A lot of people's opinion has flipped as if he can get to 18 and subsequently 19 major championships. So I would think Haney's opinion has changed since the end of this book in what, 2011 or 2012?
Here's what I'm thinking. Tiger now has 16, right?
15.
Okay.
Yes.
If he wins another, he'll be at 16. He'll be two back. Yes. I think that really will reinvigorate him to believe it's possible, because it is all about, like Hank said in this too, it's about the juice. It's about having the will to win. And Tiger may not really have it anymore. He has other priorities. His kids are coming of age and he wants to spend time with his family. He's a very different person than he was during his time with Hank and during his time after Hank as well. But if he can smell what might happen, I think that will really put him into that next gear again.
Yeah, and you know how his affinity for these certain venues just makes him want to play even more great and be more of a legend the way he is. So like if there's a lineup where it's a Masters and then a US Open at Torrey Pines, or we see a British Open at St. Andrews coming up in the next several years, those are opportunities where he might be able to sneak and grab two majors in a year.
Yeah,
you know, having his B game, but playing at the right venue where he knows how to get around the course and win a tournament there. So these are going to be things that I'm going to look out for in the future years from Tiger's game, as it precludes to the Haney relationship and whatnot. It just felt like, you're right, there was a lot of just sourpuss, a lot of, you know, I wish this for Tiger, I wish Tiger did this.
That
I wish
wish
Tiger
list
did
was
a lot of dirt on the grave there about what he wished Tiger Woods did during their relationship, despite the fact he won several majors and several tournaments every single year they were together.
I mean, Hank said it throughout this chapter, his time with me was as good as his time with Butch, and it was. It maybe wasn't as dominant in terms of victory margin.
He loved one of the numbers. He loved the win percentage there.
Yeah, but it certainly was in terms of ability to contend. If his whole point of coaching Tiger was to ensure Tiger always had an opportunity to win, then he wholeheartedly achieved that goal easily.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure. And then obviously, you know, he looked back at that. He loved harping on the win percentage, like I mentioned.
Yeah,
didn't quite have as many home runs, but in terms of batting average, may have been a little bit better than Butch Harmon overall as a swing coach for Tiger. And then he obviously gets a little jelly belly, a little jealous and envious of his successor, Sean Foley, the new guy who stepped in, throwing a little bit of dirt on the things that he was teaching and how Sean Foley was throwing some shade back at Haney as well, too. So there's definitely that, like, yeah, it went well, but I also don't love the way it ended, and I'm still sour about the breakup. There's nothing you can say about that. You were getting that vibe the whole time in Chapter 8.
It was kind of like, I quit before I got fired, but yes. I wish I didn't have to do that. I wish I could still be his coach at the same time.
Well, one great story about someone who did get fired and exacted some revenge.
Yeah.
Shout out to Stevie Williams for getting fired by Tiger at the tournament he was hosting and not playing in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yep.
Then Steve Williams goes and wins with Adam Scott and rubs it right in Tiger's face and said, this was the most rewarding win of my career, despite everything I did with Tiger, just rubbing it in there after the relationship went sour.
We remember that. You remember, I think we both remember that win. And that was like, that stung. That was like, that is, wow.
a rare gut shot that someone gets on Tiger Woods. You know, it was an interesting moment there. But overall, it's about the relationship. It was an interesting look into the behind the scenes. A lot of swing mechanics talk, a lot of yardage and tournament performance talk. If you like the minutia and the week to week and the grind and everything that goes into the prep of the tournament, this is absolutely the golf porn for you. I can't recommend it enough on that note.
Yeah.
I didn't love the tone that kind of Haney took throughout the book. It just seemed very accusational and defensive the whole time.
Yes.
But overall, it was very informative, and I got some gems out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was some good stuff in here. Like you said, his tone throughout was just incredibly defensive and kind of like saying, I would have been so much better if Tiger was a better student. And, you know, he was still pretty good. I mean, whatever you want to say about Hank and Tiger, their partnership certainly was pretty fruitful. And that's that. Now we need another book to read.
We do. Yeah. Again, Hank, I will tweet at you and your podcast Twitter. More than welcome to come on. Open invite to clear the air on anything that's in the book or not covered in the book, you know, give us that light and show us the other side as well too. What we didn't read there, but interesting read, The Big Miss. What's up next for us? We don't know. We're toying around with a few different ideas golf book wise. If anyone has any suggestions, you're at MWRINC on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life One on Twitter. Hit us up on IG as well too. COL Podcast. If you got a good golf read, we're down to join and make it our next book club read for sure. Yeah,
let us know. But now it's time to get into this week's featured guest.
Yes, a big time guest too.
You know, we were talking about Nate Lashley, who was our first PGA Tour winner that we had on the podcast.
Yep.
This week you got to talk with a winner from the LPGA Tour, the 2019 champion of the Volunteers of America Classic right outside of Dallas, Texas. So right where I was for about 9 months out there. So not
that's right. She's from Lido, right outside Fort Worth, suburb area there. So right in your neck of the woods where you used to be. Yeah.
And as one person was able to guess through your social media guessing game, Cheyenne Knight is who's going to be joining us. But first, we want to let you know about Groove It Golf, creators of the sold-out Groove It Golf Brush. Sold out,
high demand. It does what the average brush can't. It's just plain and simple. Groove It Brush, just they've figured out the inventive technology, the amazing ingenuity to put the ability to put water or the solution of your choice inside the brush. Truly revolutionary. It just makes things easier for the golfer. It's really mind-blowing. It's one of those things where you look at the brush for the first time you see it, you're just like, wow, that just makes too much sense. That's too easy. How did I not think of this before?
Yeah. And unlike anything else in this category, this is not too good to be true. This really is pretty incredible.
It really is.
It's great. And in case you were worried that it wasn't, it's got a 3-year bristle guarantee. So if you can wear out those brush heads, clean your golf clubs in 3 years, send it back, get a free replacement. Pretty awesome. It's sold out, but you can get on the waiting list. You can get it on back order and be ready for it when it comes back in stocks. You can have it attached to your bag as quickly as possible and make sure you get really incredible consistency and control with clean grooves. It's just phenomenal. So make sure to head over to grooveitbrush.com and back order your Groove It Brush today so it's ready for you. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com.
Next up on the tee, she is a 2019 winner on the LPGA Tour, currently ranked 81st in the world. Also, big-time foodie living in Texas just like myself, a Roll Tide alum and an up-and-coming talent in women's golf. It's Cheyenne Knight joining the Course of Life. Cheyenne, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's just get to some business out of the way first regarding the potential return of the tour. It looks like the LPGA is trying to make a return here sometime in summer, potentially July. What are the most recent updates that you've heard as a player on tour, and how ready are you to go on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm probably about a 12 to get back out there. The break has been nice. It's the longest break I've ever had since playing golf, so I've enjoyed being around my family a little bit more. But we're scheduled to get going July 31st. We're going to be in Toledo, Ohio for 2 weeks for a new tournament that they created, which is the Drive On Championship, and then the Marathon Classic, technically in Sylvania, Ohio. So we're there for 2 weeks, and then we're supposed to go to Scotland after that. But tentatively, we're supposed to go to Scotland. We're not confirmed yet, but so we'll see about that.
Okay, cool. So I guess as we've watched tour golf return with the PGA Tour, the guys in the last couple of weeks, we've seen the look of tournaments be a lot different. Have they sent anything out to you as to like what the tournaments in Ohio will look like and kind of all everything that's going to be different for these first few stops as we kind of ease back into normal with golf?
Right. So the first tournament, the Drive On Championship, there's going to be no fans. It's actually going to be 3 days. I think they're kind of going to see how it all goes. But the Marathon Classic, there are going to be fans. So we'll see what the PGA Tour does and when they start allowing fans. But we're scheduled to have fans there. So I think that will be a little bit interesting. because I know that we all like to interact with the fans, like to take pictures and sign autographs. Right. So I don't think we will be able to do that. And I'm kind of interested to see if they limit the amount of people that can be on the grounds. But if my family chooses to go, they will just have a general grounds ticket. Their family badge won't work to get into the practice areas or inside the ropes. So that's kind of a little bit different. But I think in the next few weeks we'll get more information on the fan aspect.
Definitely, yeah. And so the PGA Tour is going to trial that in Columbus at the Memorial a few weeks before you ladies are. So we'll see kind of how that experiment works. Definitely appreciate the update there. So again, it's Cheyenne Knight joining us, and you've got a great career in golf that is just getting going right now. I want to go back to some of the earliest moments, though. I love doing research on our guests here and looking back to the origin of them playing golf. I went back into your bio and found a story of when you were playing golf in a league as a very young kid, and you allegedly made a 15 on one hole, and it helped motivate you to start playing the game more as a kid. I have to ask, do you remember anything about that 15 specifically and what that day was like for you?
Oh yeah. So I played in like a summer golf league. It was three holes, and I just did it because both of my best friends were in it, and you got to swim after and have hot dogs.
Nice.
So you tee up from the 150 mark, and I remember I kind of hit my drive a few yards, and then I hit it into the trees, and I didn't really know the rules of golf at the time. And I was in the trees, and I just kept hitting it and hitting it and hitting it. And I think finally a parent came over and helped me take an unplayable. So it added up to a 15, and I got dead last. And from then I didn't get a ribbon. I didn't get a trophy, and I'm very competitive, and I don't like to lose. So after that, my dad is a pretty avid golfer, and so I asked him to take me out to the course so I could practice.
Nice. Yeah. And you were on your way from there. That was all the motivation you needed to take it and run with it. And you had a great, great junior career as well. And the one part that I want to talk about before we get about into everything you're doing professionally, I want to talk about kind of the college recruitment process, because I know that there are different schools that you were interested in. And I know there's an interesting story as of how you came your decision to go play at Alabama. Talk about what that process was like as you were going through high school and choosing which college you wanted to potentially play at.
Right. So I'm being from Texas. There's a lot of great schools in Texas, but my dad went to Texas A&M. I feel like I always wanted to go there and play golf. But my freshman year of high school, I saw the Alabama women's golf team win the national championship in 2012. And I knew nothing about Alabama at the time. I knew a little bit about the football, but I didn't realize they had a good golf program. And watching them win, that was like, oh, I want to go there. So after that, Alabama was my dream school. And it's kind of funny, like when I took a visit there, my like sophomore year of high school, the coach was like he turned out to be my coach, but Mick was, he kind of basically told me I wasn't good enough to play on his team.
Oh, really?
And yeah, he didn't really offer me, didn't seem that interested, but I think that just pushed me to work harder. And so I kind of like crossed off some schools. So at the end, it was between Alabama and Arizona. And I told Mick I would love to play for him. You know, I want to work really hard and to play for him one day. And he gave me a scholarship, and the rest is history.
Very cool. I got to ask, how did Dad take the decision originally once you leaned away from A&M? Has he gotten over that or?
Yeah, he's gotten over it.
Okay.
he knew that I wanted to go there, and he was very supportive with it. He was even supportive when I was looking at the University of Texas. And
oh, wow.
Him being on campus with the orange, hook 'em horns and all that, it was a tough tough go for him, but he was very supportive. And he roots for Alabama. They're in the SEC with A&M, so he considers himself an Alabama fan too.
I like that. Very cool. Let's talk about Alabama and kind of maybe what that feeling was like for yourself, you know, getting to campus and as an Alabama athlete at a school that has just such an amazing history across its entire athletic department. What was that feeling of attention like for you coming onto the campus as a student athlete and adjusting your freshman year?
Right. I mean, you're exactly right. Alabama is great, especially in regards to athletics. I mean, you're around people who have been in the Olympics, won national championships, just all around you. And I just think the people that you surround yourself with is really important. And there's just a standard of excellence that's at Alabama. And I remember being around Minka Fitzpatrick a lot, who plays for the Steelers. Now, and he, like, we would just talk, because, like, the mindset, like, football is a lot different than golf, but it is really similar. And he just, like, had a passion to always get better and love the grind. And so we talk about that a lot. But just, I would say you were just surrounded by so many people who wanted you to succeed. So I loved every second of it.
Nice. And that opportunity to learn from guys who would be professional athletes and girls in different sports as well, too. You know, it takes different skill sets to play these sports professionally, but, you know, it doesn't take, you know, a different skill set to have that determination and learn that confident mindset. And hopefully they rubbed off on you. Let's talk about Justin Thomas as well, too, as kind of a ambassador, not only for the men's game, but also for Alabama as well, too. I've seen pictures that you've taken with him. What's the time that you spent like Ben with him, and what have you learned watching him being a pro and being around him?
Right. So Justin is probably one of the most approachable people you could ever meet. He's very just genuine, very real, and you never know that, you know, former world number one, like top five in the world right now. But he just, I feel like he loves golf, I think, and that's one of the most, like, important things. Even when you do get to a level where it is your job and it's very grueling and, you know, it's your whole life essentially, but he loves it, loves to get better. And I remember seeing him practice one day at Alabama about 3 years ago. He came into town for a football game, and he was, like, doing a putting drill in the middle of, like, November, and I don't know when his next tournament was, but he was getting, like, kind of mad because he couldn't do this putting drill. And I mean, it looked really difficult. He had to make probably 40 putts in a row around the hole from 5 to 8 feet. And you could just see, like, he was not going to leave until he got it done, no matter if he was frustrated, if he was mad. He may have to take a break, but he did finish that drill one day. And I think he's just has a great mindset, and that he wants to be the best, so he pushes himself even in practice every day.
Yeah, and that's the stuff that the golf fans a lot of time don't see outside of the ropes. They don't see those type of practice sessions where it's that intense, and you wonder, how does he make all these 5-6 footers under pressure? Well, it's because of drills like that. He's doing things the average person would never think to do on the green.
Exactly. And he's doing that on a Friday afternoon when he's there for a football game that weekend. You know, he's still putting in the work even though he's on quote vacations.
Yeah, let's talk about your career now, because I know that you spent a little time, and we've highlighted lots of different Symetra Tour pros as well, kind of the road to the LPGA that helped you and your launching pad to get to the LPGA. Talk about the experience that you got once you came out of Alabama and learning how to be on the road and the professional circuit and kind of managing your time as a professional golfer.
Yeah, so kind of different, like, from the LPGA, like, with Q School, you can go straight to the LPGA. You don't, it's not like the men where you have to do the Korn Ferry first, essentially, to get your card. But I would say I really wish that girls would have to do Symetra first. But, I mean, there are girls that haven't done Symetra who've played great on the LPGA. But for me, Symetra taught me so much. It's hard. I mean, very grueling, just driving to every tournament, you know. just, I mean, it was, I honestly came out of college going on Symetra, and I was like, I would say a little bit, a little bit arrogant. I was like, oh, you know, I was a really good college player. Like, this is going to be a breeze. I'm going to, you know, play well. Like, really not a big deal. But that is wrong. I would say it's kind of a shame that the girls on Smetra, like, really don't get the credit that they deserve because, you know, you're driving every week and there's a lot of gritty players out there. And, you know, you play in spots where you probably won't ever play with some good golf courses, but you're in the middle of nowhere most of the time. And for me, like in college, I had my friends, I had stuff to do, I had class, but going just straight to golf and not knowing, you know, like what my practice schedule would be like the week of a tournament, like how many practice rounds I'd play, the pro-ams, the pro-am parties, you know, playing with a cut and, you know, playing for money and playing to move up on the money list and hopefully get your card or go to Q school. It was very stressful, I would say, and I really had to make a conscious effort to try to find stuff to do, to like make me like happy out off the golf course, because it can't be all golf. So me and my mom, we try to like find a cute coffee shop or restaurant or go to a movie.
Yeah, you got to keep it original when you're on the road, especially in these random ass places, you know.
Exactly. I mean, you're in middle of Kansas, middle of Arkansas, like South Dakota. I mean, you are in the boonies. And so, but I think, and it just like really made me appreciate, just like, I feel like it makes you appreciate like your job a little bit more. Cause I mean, so many girls like want to be playing on Symetra, want to be playing on the LPGA. So just kind of taking a step back and just enjoying the experience, even though it might be hard at the time.
Definitely. It helped you learn. And it was that curve that you needed to get yourself to the next level. Obviously getting yourself to the LPGA tour, which is the goal of, you know, women golfing around the world that aspire to be at that level like you are. So let's now talk about the Volunteers of America Classic. So just refresh for everyone who doesn't know how long that tournament's been in the area. It's a fairly new tournament to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which is where you are currently located. But just talk about kind of your knowledge of that event and the history of it.
Right. So, yeah, it hasn't really been here that long. But their goal, Mike McCabe of Old American and the Volunteers of America people, they want to make the Volunteers of America tournament the best stop on tour, and they have done a great job. It used to be at Las Colinas Country Club a few years ago, and I actually played in that tournament as a freshman in college. I won the college qualifier and got to play in it. I made the cut and finished around 25th, I think.
Nice.
So it's a fairly new tournament, but this is the this year, 2020, will be the third year that it's been at Old American. And so they have really made the event top notch and want it to be the best stop on tour.
Nice. And so when you got to the tournament, the fall 2019, you know, leading up to that week, did you have any inclination that you were about to have the week that you were have? Was there anything in your golf game, you know, that had you kind of confident and feeling like this could be the week for you?
Well, the 2019 season as a whole was extremely difficult and hard on me, emotionally, physically, because my number that I got through Q school, I finished 27th at Q school, which I thought was, you know, a good number on the priority list, but my priority number ended up being 155. So I was not in a lot of tournaments at first, and I had to reshuffle. I flew all the way to Australia to do Monday qualifiers at the beginning of the year. I Monday qualified in Phoenix, shot 63, and then I made the cut, got me reshuffled in. But then I took a lot of chances that year. I went over to the UK to qualify for the British Open, and I did. But it was like very, I was just playing catch up the whole year and putting too much pressure on myself to, you know, finish well so that I could keep my card or move up on the money list. And that was all, that's all I was thinking about the whole year, which is not the mindset to have.
Right.
Instead of enjoying myself and playing to win, I was just playing to make the cut or keep my card. So I wasn't like setting myself up to play well. So I got a new caddy the week before the Volunteers of America Classic, and in Indiana was our first week together. Brian Mahoney is my caddy, and he just made me so calm. And the week before in Indianapolis, I kind of found something in my swing, got back to my usual shot shape, which was hitting a draw. And Brian looked at me and he was like, "You're hitting it really good." And I was like, "Yeah, well, let's just get some good momentum next week in Texas, and let's just go to Q School with that momentum, because I needed a top five finish to keep my card." But that week in Texas, the cut didn't matter. It didn't matter if I finished 20th or 50th. It didn't matter if I made the cut. I had to play really well, and that was the first time I actually enjoyed myself on the golf course probably that whole year, because I had nothing to lose. And that's what you see Justin Thomas, like, they have fun and they're playing to win, like, they're playing within themselves and they're confident in their ability, they're not worried about anything else. And so that week, I was playing the win, and I was having a blast doing it.
Nice. Yeah, that's a dangerous combo when you're, you know, playing well, and then you're also mentally freewheeling it, and you don't have things getting in your way consciously. So obviously a good collection of ideas for a week that put together an amazing start to your career. That moment when you made that final putt, I see you kind of reach your hands up in the air. You know, what was it more like? Was it excitement, jubilation, or was it more like relief? What were the, like, the first thoughts that came over you as you finished on the 18th and knew you'd won the event?
Oh gosh. I would say it was more, I was just so grateful and thankful, because like my faith is like a really big part of just my life and like my journey. And like that day, I never like prayed to win or expected to win. And I had faith knowing that whatever happened, like, God was in control and I was going to be okay. And, you know, I was praying the whole day when I was nervous, just for me to enjoy it, enjoy the moment. And I definitely felt the Lord's presence that day. So it was just full thankfulness coming out.
Very cool. Again, she's at C Knight Golf 33 on Instagram. It's Cheyenne Knight. And some other things I wanted to get to, because we mentioned the ties that you had to Alabama. Let's talk about Alabama football, because I feel like I have to mention that when I have a Roll Tide alum on going to games at Bryant Denny and whatnot. What was like your maybe craziest experience at an Alabama football game, or the most notable game that you went to in the time that you were there in Tuscaloosa?
Oh gosh, I've been to a few playoff games, Alabama and Clemson, but that's not in Bryant-Denny. But, you know, always the LSU games are pretty crazy. Unfortunately, oh, yeah. I went to the one last year where we lost.
Yeah, we won't talk about that one, that's okay.
So, but I was at the 9-6 game, and it was like cold and rainy, and it was a great game. But LSU at home is always a good one. But I was unfortunately there when we lost. But also, I went to the Alabama Clemson game in New Orleans in, let's see, 2017.
Yeah.
So that one was fun too.
Good stuff. And in terms of like tour life, look behind the scenes for everyone on the LPGA tour. Talk about some of your closest friends that are on tour now. I know you played with a couple teammates at Alabama that are regulars on tour now. Who's like your go-to practice group on a Monday or Tuesday?
So this year I've become really good friends with Sarah Schmelzel and Elizabeth Sokol. They're my buddies, and only playing four tournaments this year. I haven't like been playing a lot of practice rounds, which is kind of crazy. But in Australia, we all stayed together. We played practice rounds. Love their caddies too. And we, at our Airbnb, we play card games and we have a lot of fun. We watch The Bachelor. We watch anything and everything. So they're my best friends. I miss them. And I hope we can play practice rounds together soon.
Nice. The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, everyone's favorite guilty pleasure on TV. Any thoughts on Claire, our upcoming Bachelorette, and how that season might go down?
You know, I hope she's a little bit more mature, being older. Should be, but I do love the drama. So hopefully there's some drama in there. But I think she'll be good. I think it's good for the whole franchise to kind of freshen it up a little bit with someone a little bit older and more mature, not 23-year-old. So I'm excited about it.
Good stuff. And then our final question that we love to ask our golfers here is our 19th hole question. Myself and my co-host, we're okay at holes 1 through 18. We're really good at the 19th hole, though. So I got to ask, when you finish a round or a long day practicing or whatnot, what is like your favorite thing in the clubhouse to like eat? What's your go-to meal and maybe a go-to drink you like to have after you play as well?
Ooh, after I play. Okay, well, drink, I get an Arnold Palmer. Nice. Or a tea, being from Texas, but I would love an Arnold Palmer. And then, like, after a long day, I would say, like, on the road, like, Chipotle is a go-to on the road. I don't really go a lot when I'm at home, but on the road, definitely Chipotle. Or I like a good steak and like some broccoli and mac and cheese. And then for dessert, I'm a cookie person, just a chocolate chip cookie. So that's probably my ideal hearty meal after
I like
the
that.
Round.
Definitely treating yourself with a steak there. No shame in it. I love
yes.
it. Awesome.
No
Again,
shame.
Cheyenne, thanks so much for joining. Looking forward to following you on the LPGA. Hopefully see more trophies lifted once we get back to golf here and hit them straight. All right.
Great. Thank you for having me. Hope to talk soon.
That interview with Cheyenne Knight is thanks to our friends at Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. It's a one-of-a-kind phone holder for golfers designed to mount right onto the golf cart. Alex, it's my favorite golf accessory now, hands down.
Yeah, I mean, you've been a voucher, indeed.
Yeah.
I appreciate the testimonial as well.
It's phenomenal. It works with any phone model. It Velcros onto the cart in seconds, and it keeps your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips. You can change music, answer calls and texts and your DMs and more with the Phone Caddy, and you can do Instagram Lives with it, which turn that camera around on you.
That's right.
You're good to go while you're bombing your way down the course to find your ball in the deep right rough or, you know, wherever it may be. It's the most fun functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. Not only is a Phone Caddy a great gift for any golfer, it can be a great gift to give at golf events or buddies or that golf trip. You're doing anything, everything. It's phenomenal. And right now, for our listeners, you can save an extra 20% off your purchase with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. They have a plethora of different colors and options to make it your own. Again, you can get your Phone Caddy today with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE for 20% off at DesertFoxGolf.com. So head on over and get your Phone Caddy today. Again, that's DesertFoxGolf.com. Great chat there with Cheyenne Knight, 15 on a par 3, no less. That's just
well, I mean, I think she was like 5 or 6 or 7 years old, but still, just I love that she counted to 15 and then they actually like ran the numbers for her. What's like the highest score that you remember making and like actually like writing, like actually put to memory on a golf
course? I for the longest time, and still to a great extent, I stop at 10. So I may have more strokes than that, but I stop at 10.
And the only reason I bring it up, I do have a traumatic experience. I'll air it out just because I'm a man of honesty. I had a 9 in a tournament a few years ago where I was on the green in 3 shots. So what was that, a 5 or 6 putt? And it was not just like a 5 or 6 putt. It was like a 4 putt, from 3 feet. It was like a full on, like, I have the yips and can't get the ball in the hole moment in the middle of a tournament. Somehow I think I like broke 90 that day, even with a 9 on a par 4. But that was my dramatic moment. Not quite a 15 like Cheyenne told when she was a kid, but that was my big number on a scorecard.
Still, that's, I'm sorry.
Yeah, happens to the best of us. But she turned that motivation into being a professional golfer, and now she's winning tournaments on the LPGA Tour. But yeah, it was cool to hear her stories. Obviously, that the Alabama athlete fraternity is really cool. She's in close ties with Justin Thomas, and just the fact that she got to like sit at the CAF in like the athlete center at Alabama and talk with Minka Fitzpatrick and Alabama football players about what goes into their prep for games and how they prep as athletes and whatnot, like. That kind of stuff, when that rubs off on you, like, it can only help you succeed as an athlete, no matter what you do. So it was really cool to hear.
Fantastic. Let's talk about our Patreon page. Again, for $2 a month, you can support the Course of Life podcast, get access to our exclusive blogs that we put up there. If you want to pay a little more, you can get access to some really cool exclusive extra interviews that Alex does as well, because you're a busy guy. You keep talking to people.
Yes,
and,
we are. We're
gonna coming up this week,
travel interview. Nate Lashley story blog as well too. That full behind the scenes story on how we got him on the podcast as well on our Patreon. So good stuff there.
Pretty awesome. Let's talk for a minute, Alex.
Yes.
How are you feeling?
A bit of a burying of the lead. We're always golf first because we're golfers at heart. But I would be damned if I didn't mention the massive Adam Schefter bomb that hit the NFL. Well, there were a couple, actually. We can disregard the one where the Patriots were punished for cheating again. But that's just a whole – we don't need to talk about that.
They're always getting punished for cheating. That's old news.
That's nothing new. That's old hat. What we really need to talk about is, holy crap, Bill Belichick, Sunday night, coming over the top, Adam Schefter tweeting it out, the Patriots bringing in former NFL MVP and Carolina Panthers quarterback Cam Newton to contend with Jared Stidham for the starting job. When I sent this out to you, what were your initial thoughts before I go off on this interesting move?
So I was surprised but not surprised. I think I was more surprised because I wasn't really paying attention, so I forgot that Cam Newton was released.
Yeah, just sitting out there. the market was not booming hot for him. Let's just put it that way. No, it wasn't a white hot market for Cam Newton. So
I mean, it's it makes perfect sense to me in every possible way. I will say, they Cam Newton is not getting paid.
Oh, no. So that's the beauty of what Bill Belichick does. He waits until your market is at its absolute bottom and he buys as low as he possibly can on the player stock. He knew that Cam Newton was desperate to cling on to any opportunity that came his way at this point in the summer, not seeing anything come directly to him in terms of a direct offer from another NFL club. Belichick sells really low, makes it all incentive-based, pretty much all incentive-based, anything he can or will do this season for the Patriots, and really puts the onus on Newton to perform. Genius marketing from Belichick to bring him in.
I will say, even with the incentives, we're talking $7.5 million, he's still one of the lowest paid quarterbacks in the league.
Oh, yeah. It's insane. The Patriots have three quarterbacks on the roster totaling, I think, probably half of the salary of a bunch of starting quarterbacks in the league for crappier teams. Yeah. That's all you need to know. It's a very interesting move. It's a fascinating move for sports talk radio. They needed something desperate, and they can cling on to this for the next few weeks now. This is good fodder in the offseason. So shout out to the NFL and Belichick for producing that at a minimum, right?
So here's my big question for you. Do you think Bill Belichick is gonna, are we gonna have one quarterback out of this bunch win the starter job, or are we gonna have quarterback committee for the season?
Oh, yeah. Little double action. Little dual QB action.
Especially when you bring in someone like Cam Newton.
Is this, the SEC, Mike? What am I watching? What is this, Florida versus Mississippi State or something like that?
I mean, if someone's going to do it, it's going to be Bill Belichick.
Right. And Josh McDaniels, offensive coordinator, who drafted Tim Tebow out of college, worked out Lamar Jackson out of college. He would love nothing more than to succeed with a quarterback like Cam Newton. A very fascinating idea of seeing them both in the same game. I kind of always had assumed in my head that one would win the job, but I wouldn't put anything past it at this point. Nothing's unrealistic in this world in 2020, as we have seen through the first half of this calendar year. So wouldn't put it past two QB system in New England, but it'll be interesting to see them fight for the job throughout the next couple months. Definitely some big big competition for Stidham, who didn't think he had it until a couple of days ago.
Right. Really, everything's on its head now in New England. It'll be a fun offseason. Not to bring it back to reality for a second, but if we have an NFL season, it'll be a lot of fun to watch.
Massive asterisk between everything here.
Let's hashtag always out with food.
That's right. And it's always brought to you by Saucy, promo code Course of Life to get $5 off your first delivery of beer, wine, liquor to your house. Bars are closed again in a lot of places.
Florida, Texas.
Where you are, but where I am, they are.
I bet you half of them are closed here anyway. So
if you want to be safe and get the booze shipped directly to you, promo code Course of Life, saucy.com or the Saucy app, promo code Course of Life, $5 off. Shout out to them. Always end with food. I've been experimenting with the air fryer. Shout out to my buddy David. Got me a really great wedding gift. One of the best ones I got. Got the air fryer. I've done chicken drumsticks, all different flavors. I've done fried shrimp. I've turned some potatoes into potato chips.
Nice.
I've been having a lot of fun with it the last couple of weeks. It's a fun tool. It really is.
Fantastic. You know, I've heard a lot of things about it. I don't think I'm ever going to get it, but I think it's pretty cool.
If it gets gifted to you, it's one of those things that you'll immediately love. But I can see why, if it's not in your life, you wouldn't like go out and rush to get it.
It's one of those things. If it was gifted to me, I would use it. But I'm not going to go spend money on it. Let's talk about the convergence of food and sport for a moment.
It is that time of year.
It is the July 4th Nathan's Hot Dog Eating hot dog competition. I don't know what the right word is.
Yeah, if we'd be remiss if we did not mention the hot dog eating
competition. Joey Chestnut.
And it is not canceled.
No, of course
not. Unlike everything else in the world, the hot dog eating competition is going to happen on July 4th. It's not going to happen at that very public corner in Coney Island, Surf and Stillwell, where they have the huge crowd. However, it's going to be, you'll appreciate this, Mike, at an undisclosed location.
Area 51.
Location TBD. Very secret.
It's happening in New York City subway station. Rushing,
you know?
It's happening at the White House.
Ooh, that would be very cool, actually.
Donald Trump's taking place in it. He's going to participate.
Chestnut's still overwhelming favorite as well, if you want to bet on that.
How many years has he won now in a row?
But Stoney took his prize a year or two now. But Chestnut's been back since.
Okay.
I want to say it's like 12 out of 13 or 13 out of 14 or some insane run. Chestnut can defeat again.
We all thought Tiger Woods was the best, but I'm sorry, Joey Chestnut is a god.
Oh no, the 30 for 30 on the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Competition, the career of Joey Chestnut is nothing short of informative. It's a cinematic masterpiece, and I encourage everyone to watch it as well as the competition this Sunday. Happy July 4th to everyone out there. For Michael, I'm Alex. This has been another episode of Course of Life. Everyone have a good week.